Welcome, dear listeners, to one more episode of Afternoon Satsang. And as always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam. And with me is Arvind. But it's not just Arvind this time, and we have another special guest with us. But before that, as we always begin and as we always must, we begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and pray that Swami speaks through us to all of you and that we all are part of this beautiful satsang. So to take this discussion forward, let me welcome Arvind. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and let me also welcome another Arvind who has joined us. This is Y. Arvind, and he has been an alumnus in Swami's institute. He has been specially blessed by Swami to be part of so many cultural activities as a student, and even after passing out in guiding the students, he has studied a lot of literature. He has been a very good student of Sai, if I can put it that way. And therefore, I am sure that this afternoon satsang is going to get enriched further with the entry of Arvind. Sairam Arvind, welcome to the satsang.
Thank you, Arvind. Thank you, Prem. It's a wonderful opportunity to be back at home. Well, east or west, home is best. And for me, Parthi has always been home.
Right.
I feel wonderful when I come back home, and of course, yes, memories.
You know, talking of memories and you feeling wonderful, today, actually, just before this satsang, I'm not feeling so wonderful because somehow, you know, I just happened to put on a documentary. This documentary was about the World War II. And in the beginning, I was so fascinated by the strategies, the military ideas that went behind the war, and I got pulled into the documentary. But you know, at the end of the documentary, it is such a sad feeling. You know, 50 million people wiped off the face of the earth in a single war, and another 100 million crippled and disabled because of the war. And it leaves you with such a sad feeling. So honestly speaking, I am not actually in such a great spirit because, you know, it saps you, it feels so draining. So I wish, Prem, that you take us ahead in this satsang today.
Right, I know. I think quite honestly, that's why they've named some things as memories and some things as maybe nightmares or something which you don't like to revisit. You know, quite truly, because memories always, you know, has a very nice, pleasant flavor to it, even when you hear those words. And in fact, that's what we do here all the time, don't we? You know, sit here and relive memories which we would like to live again and again.
Yes, but this definitely was not a memory that I would like anybody to relive because it is very, very, very painful.
But you know, what you said is very interesting.
Hmm.
Ups and downs all of us go through, and we always feel low sometimes, we feel anxious sometimes. But interestingly, invariably when you catch yourself being sad or catch yourself being anxious, you're either thinking about the past or you're thinking about the future.
Very interesting point.
Isn't it? And invariably that happens.
Mm.
Either you're uncertain about something which is coming in the future, or you're, you know, ruing about something which you've missed in the past, or some opportunity which you've lost, or something unpleasant which has happened in the past.
Yeah, definitely. Today morning I have spent completely in the past. 5-6 decades back in the past. And yeah, and really,
you know, isn't it quite interesting? Because hardly you would have been had any influence in your life because of the World War II, directly. You wouldn't have lost anybody who's dear to you in the World War II.
Correct.
But something, and nothing can be changed about what has already happened. But still, that has the power to actually ruin your present.
Yes, it definitely did.
Yeah, why go so far as World War II? Just think of exams and wow, my hair begins to stand, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
I've been writing a lot of exams. Actually, I did a silly calculation quite some time back and found that I had written 1,864 examinations.
Wow.
By the time I had finished my academics in the year 2000.
That really shows how disturbed you are about exams to sit and calculate that.
Did you do an exact calculation or was it a random number?
I included the CIEs, the midterms, the unit tests right from standard one. And to be honest with you, it is a pretty low number considering the number of exams the current generation has to write.
Hmm.
So, you know, as you were saying, you know, when you go back into the past, when you think of the exams that you've written, you end up having a sense of apprehension about any future exams you may have to write.
Hmm.
So when I think of the past, I get a bit jittery, you know, seriously jittery when I think of the past with reference to the examinations, of course. Hmm. Wait, let's be focused. I love the past, I love the future, but yes, exams in the past, I'm scared. Exams in the future, I'm anxious. So you see, I'm missing out on a lot of happy things that are happening to me right now by worrying about the exams in the past and, you know, exams in the future. No? Have you ever been through something like this? Oh,
definitely. I'm telling you, one of the most common nightmares that I have even till today is entering an exam hall being underprepared.
I get dreams like that.
Really, that's a nightmare. I wake up from the in the middle of the sleep and...
It's either like you're not prepared or you're prepared for physics and it's actually a bioscience exam going on there.
Awesome. I've been there.
And you know, that's the beautiful thing. In fact, even while going through the period of exams, invariably I would find solace by thinking of the days which were just after the exam. You know, I would say that I'm getting there, you know, it's just a matter of this 1 week I have to go through and I'll be in that time when you've just finished your exam, because that's the
just
most exciting
time. Let the exam get over. Yeah, we keep talking that.
But interestingly, that's when I do badly in my exam. You know, when I try to overlook the time I'm going through and I say, let me be in that future when I'm free of this thing which is catching at my neck, that's when I've done badly in my exams too.
So we miss out on the present while we're worried about the past and the future.
I think that's... maybe a best summary of that, isn't
it? Correct. So thinking about the past, thinking about the future is a sure way, sure road to sorrows and worries and anxieties.
Right. And many times, you know, when you're talking about thinking about the future, isn't it surprising that many times we give importance to something which is in the future, but when we actually get there, it's so trivial.
Even the examination example that you gave, you know, I'm waiting that let these exams get over in the next 4 days. I'm going to have a rocking time, a wonderful time because it's exam free. But actually when you come to the time when the exams have got over, you come and it's not a very, you know, a very happy and joyous world.
You're so tired, you're so sapped, you're so like incoherent, I would say, once the exams are over. You simply say, let's just crash.
You just have some food and sleep off.
Sleep.
Yeah. Right. And you know, exams and still... when we're still there, let me add one more thing. Invariably, that 12th standard, 10th standard board exams is like the biggest roadblock in your student days, you know.
Yes.
And many times, I've had seniors come back to me and say that, you know, after all, it's not so important.
Hmm.
People will tell you that, you know, this is the thing and this is going to be the first milestone in your educational career and all that. And many people came back and said that, you know what, that 5%, 80, 85, 85, 90, it makes no difference.
Hmm.
When you go back and look at 20 years from now, it actually means nothing. So I'm not saying that we take ourselves in, ahead in time and then look back, but actually what we are scared of in the future may not be as important always.
So again, it comes back to the same thing. We lose out on the present while we are worried about the past and we are anxious about the future.
No wonder Swami keeps harping on that beautiful statement, right?
And I think we should play that. We've heard that so many times, but nothing is more powerful than hearing it in Swami's own voice. So let's just play that little clip.
Past is past, forget the past. Future is not sure. Present is all important. It is not ordinary present, it is omnipresent.
So that went very fast, huh?
That was really fast. But you know, how many times you've heard Swami saying that? The past is past, don't worry about the past. Future is so uncertain, why are you dwelling in the future? Live in the present.
It's the omnipresent.
It's omnipresent.
Hmm. You know, I also remember a similar dialogue from that famous animation movie Kung Fu Panda, where the wise master Oogway says that the past is a mystery. I mean, the past is history. Sorry, the past is history. The future is a mystery. The present is a gift. And that's why it's called the present.
Yeah, there are some very, very animated thinkers who come out with the greatest of greatest of statements. Exactly.
You know, taking the discussion along, if we say that, you know, living in the past or the future causes worry and sorrow, I mean, but it is not always the case, right?
True.
Because there are many times when, as you said, in this satsang, we are reliving those beautiful memories of the experience of devotees with Swami. All those are in the past. So we are living in the past and it's pleasant too. So I think it is not right to say that living in the past or
future... Many times you're excited about something which is coming in the future too, right?
Huh.
Something interesting which is going to happen. and you're all excited.
It's like saying, you know, all apples are fruits, but all fruits are not apples.
Exactly.
You may be miserable right now, you may be worried, you may be disturbed, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you're always, you know, in a sad state.
Yeah, it is like, it doesn't mean that whenever you think of past or future, you will be sad and anxious. But whenever you're sad or anxious, if you examine, you can surely find yourself either in the future or the past.
Yeah, I couldn't have put that better. Correct. Exactly.
So, therefore, if you want to be, you know, peaceful or the state of equanimity or sthita prajna, as Krishna would say it in the Bhagavad Gita, it is safe and better to live in the present. It's like, it's not as if I light firecrackers, I am going to be burnt or I suffer from burns. It's not compulsory. But if I don't light the firecrackers, I'm absolutely safe. So in that manner, it doesn't mean that if at all, any time I go into the past or future, I'm going to be sorrowful or anxious. But if I would like to be safe, if I would like to be peaceful and serene always, it's best to stay in the present.
Well, that's the greatest of truths with the firecracker example. Wow, I like that.
You know, because in our lives, if we look through, I would definitely love to share one incident, one episode, where I think, you know, I messed up the whole joy that was coming my way, simply because I was concentrating all the while on the future.
Okay.
Okay, this happened in 2010, in the April of 2010. I remember it was the 1st of April 2010, the All Fool's Day. And definitely, I now when I look back, I cannot miss the beauty of the day being selected for this incident. So, Swami was picking up students and staff members who would travel along with him for a Delhi trip that was coming up.
Right, okay.
On the 9th of April, I think. Swami was due to take off on the 9th of April. And, you know, it's such a, you know how that selection process is. You know, you don't know whether you're in the list, you're not in the list. And to add to the tension, if I can say so, Swami chose to do this in public view outside. Usually it is done silently and you wait for the...
I think we'll have enough stories of how Swami used to do that selection. How clandestinely Swami used to do that.
Pleasurable anticipation.
Right.
Yes.
You know, you don't know whether you're on the bus, you're off the bus, you're in form, he's talking to you, he's looking at you, he's talking to you. You don't know whether you're supposed to invest in the, you know, the sets of white safaris that he loves. you don't know whether you're supposed to go in for that or
exactly,
not.
Right.
Or should I go ahead and book my ticket?
Exactly.
And you know, sometimes it might be too late for both. You know, suddenly you know the day before and you don't have whites to be ready.
Absolutely. Or you get to know that Swami is leaving. Now what do I do? I don't have my tickets. Tickets are not available. So it's such a...
Invariably you have to be in the future.
Absolutely.
Anticipating.
Yeah. So in that... Now that... And you are awaiting, you know, it can be the registrar, it could be some other teacher who will come and tell you that, you know, you are selected, be ready. So you're looking out for anybody whom you think Swami is interacting
and
with.
And their expression when they say that will be as subtle as Swami's.
Absolutely. They look over your shoulder, a 1,000-yard stare and a whisper in your ear and walk away. You won't know it's meant for you also, right, until you look around and find that you're alone.
I remember one of my classmates saying how they were chosen for the Kudai trip. After darshan, they were going back into the hostel, which happened in Vrindavan. And there was one of the boys who came from Swami's residence and he was standing at the gate. So he was standing as if he's looking into nowhere. And every time the boy who was supposed to go, goes past, he would just look at him.
Oh.
And then look away. So everybody was walking into the hostel, going on looking at him. You know, wouldn't he look at us?
What your eyes fall on us. You know, that is what I'm saying. Any other day, suppose you're walking on the road, the vice chancellor walks up beside you and says, how are you doing? You say, sir, all fine, sir. And it's over. That's all it is. But during this time, if he comes and tells, how are you doing? Sir, I'm fine, sir. Sir, everything, all Swami's grace. You want to extract out something.
I don't know. And then Swami would himself, you know, play his part. He would come and say, so, are you going home? What's planned for summer? And many times that means nothing. Sometimes it means everything.
Exactly.
So, now Swami had chosen to do this selection process in the public.
Okay.
In the public view, and Swami had come on stage. He was sitting there and he called out S.V. Giri sir. He was not the vice chancellor then. And he called Giri sir, and Giri sir had a huge file And when he opened it, I could see that they were all profiles.
Okay.
Profile cards. I could see some pictures. I cannot make out whose picture it is. But from my position, I could see that it was pictures of students and staff people. And it was very evident that Swami was picking up people. So I was just hoping that Swami, I hope I am also there on the list. You know, it is almost like an addiction. A few months before, Swami had been to Hadshi, and I got that blessing to travel along with him. That was my first trip with Swami, and therefore I just wanted to be on the Delhi trip with Swami.
Your tastes have been ignited.
Yes.
And will anybody be able to drink water after tasting ambrosia?
Absolutely.
You know, so I don't know whether that addiction is positive or negative, because as you will see when I narrate, it could turn negative too. Because as Swami was speaking, you know, those were the days when Swami found it hard to speak, so he would usually mouth it out loudly. And I could see him clearly point to one of the cards, profile cards, and say, photographer. And I could make out, I could lip read that that's what he said. And Giri sir looked at him and nodded, saying, yes, Swami, photographer. And I felt that it was a positive nod from Swami. And I felt, if Swami has picked a photographer, most probably it has to be me only. So I got very excited. I was very thrilled. And as Swami went into the interview room, word came. The boys who were selected were being called. So it was like two students were called and told, those two students would go and pat. It was like a nuclear fission reaction, where those two will tell four, the four will tell others, and slowly. So I was just waiting, when will that pat on my shoulder come telling that you come in?
Okay.
That never happened. Some 24 people walked into the bhajan hall, and that's it. And Giri sir spoke to them and sent them out. And none of them, you know, told me anything. So I was like shocked. I was thinking, what happened? I clearly saw Swami say photographer. So was it a rejection? Did he go into the interview room, then call and say that, hey, that I have changed my mind, I have second thoughts on that photographer, you drop him. What is it? None of those news are good if I am not there on the trip. Maybe I would not have felt so bad had I not felt that I saw Swami say photographer. Now added to this was the fact that two of my colleagues who sit right next to me in the office, both of them have been picked. Okay, and in fact, one of those colleagues, during the previous trip, Swami had asked, who do you think we should include more? And I felt that for videography, we need one more person. So I had suggested his name, and Swami had picked him. You know, giving me that false sense of ego that because of me, he got selected. So now I went back to him and told him, now you're on the trip. You better ensure you pull me into the trip now. Some, you know, it's your responsibility. what can I do? I mean, totally understand what it's all Swami's choice, but I was desperate to get onto this. And every evening, you know, I would be morose, because whenever they are called for meeting, these two boys go, and I don't want to do anything with it. People come and tell, you know, Swami is attending this function in Delhi. I don't want to know about it, because if I get to know about it, I'll feel envious, I'll feel jealous, I'll feel horrible about what I'm missing. So I became the opposite. You know, I don't want to know anything about the Delhi trip. I don't want to know how long he is going to be there. In fact, that was the year 2010. The Mahakumbh Mela was being held at Haridwar.
Okay.
And it was being touted as the greatest spiritual pilgrimage gathering ever on the face of the planet. Mm. And I made my bookings to go to the Kumbh Mela. And I felt, Swami, I am also going to go on a spiritual pilgrimage. It's a fantastic thing. I am not missing anything. I am getting I was trying to live in the future, if you can say so, of how grand the Kumbh Mela will be and make my present seem better, but that just did not help. Because all these plans and all these thoughts would just lead back to sadness the minute I see these two boys getting called for another meeting. I'd say, but I'm not going to Delhi. In fact, I remember on the 4th of April, for Prasadam that day, these Munch chocolates, Munch brand chocolates, small ones, that was being distributed. Out of the blue, Swami calls the boy who is distributing that, takes up one chocolate, looks at me, smiles and tells, for you, and throws that. And I feel so special, so wonderful, so thrilled, because out of everybody only, he is giving it to me. I picked it up, and then Swami says, eat it. So I immediately ate it also, feeling so happy. And that was the end of the bhajans. So Swami just blesses everybody, goes into the car and retires. The minute Swami's car is going, you know, from, you can call the devil inside me, comes and says, you know, Arvind, these are the kind of things that you'll be missing. How many such things will happen on the Delhi trip, but you're not there on the trip?
Ooh, that must have hurt. Yes. And I'm really hurting, like almost on the verge of tears. Saying, Swami, what, Swami, why are you... Imagine I'm asking, Swami, why are you building this contrast, Swami? Why are you doing this? Why are you showing me what I'm missing? And I'm feeling horrible. And I decide to write a letter to Swami. Because those were the days, you know, what we call as the form days, when Swami would accept any letter or anything from me. So I thought, I will get up and tell Swami. Swami, please, I want to come to Delhi with you, take me with you. And I felt if I tell him like that, he will definitely take me. That was when my colleague, you know, Sai Prakash, he told me that, see Arvind, if Swami has decided not to take you, and just because right now he is giving you that opportunity to approach him as and when you wish, won't you be putting Swami in an embarrassing situation by telling him, Swami, take me, if he doesn't actually want to take you? So he said, won't that be insensitive on your part? Especially now that he is giving you, without even questioning your motives, whenever you get up to say anything, he's ready to lend his ear to you. Don't exploit it like this, no? He said. Now, at first, my reaction was irritation. I felt easy for you to say so. You are already on the trip. And, you know, last time I got you onto the trip, you are not getting me onto the trip this time. That's also burning there. And now, but, you know, later on, retrospectively looking at it, it made sense. So I felt, you know, I'll just write a letter. That's up to Swami, right? That's not a way where I'm imposing myself. If he chooses not to read, he cannot read. So I'll just give the letter. And when I told this to my colleague, to Sai Prakash, he also felt, yeah, I think letter is fine. So I wrote a letter. Of all the days, exactly on that day, and the next two days after that, Swami doesn't take my letter. He looks, as he's passing by me, he's looking at the letter, he's looking at it, he's looking at it, he's looking at it, and he's gone. He didn't take my letter. I was thinking, what is this, Swami? You don't want me to give the letter? So the day I said, Swami, you don't want me to give the letter, I won't give you the letter. I keep the letter in my pocket. He smiles, again throws prasadam for me, calls and speaks to me about something else, speaks nicely and sends me back, cracks a joke, poses for a photograph. In fact, while giving Abhayasta, looks directly into my camera lens and smiles so that I get a nice picture. But you know, the minute again Swami leaves, I feel, oh, I'm missing all these. For 10 whole days, because by now the plan had got finalized, 10 days of proximity with Swami I'm missing, and again I'm sad. And anybody who would have seen me would have thought, this guy is a fool. Why is he sad? Out of 4 days, 2 days he has received special attention physically from Swami, and yet he's sad. But that was how I was. I was sad. And then came the penultimate day, you know, on the 7th. 9th Swami is leaving in the morning. 7th, the last ever meeting, Giri sir called all these boys who were supposed to accompany Swami. This was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was sitting and crying in the studio. Saying, Swami, I'm not coming. I'm not coming. Yeah, Swami, I'm going to Kumbh Mela. I'm going to Kumbh Mela. But Swami, you know, I'm trying to, as if, you know, make Swami jealous or that you're not coming to Kumbh Mela, I'm going to Kumbh Mela. But I'm feeling horrible. And as I'm doing this, I wipe my tears. My phone starts ringing. It is Sai Prakash. He says, Arvind, can you just come out of the studio? I say, no, I cannot. Then he says, no, there's something I want to share with you. It's something fantastic. I thought he's, you know, maybe Swami has said that, there were rumors that Swami will go to Shimla also. So I thought maybe it got confirmed. So the wonderful thing is, not only Delhi, we're going to go to Shimla also. And I was least interested to know about it.
He's waiting with salt outside.
Salt
and sprinkle on your wound.
I was not interested. I said, nah, yeah, whatever it is, yeah, very happy. You keep it. I don't want to know about it. He says, no, please come out. So I say, okay, fine. So I just walk out of the studio. He comes running and embraces me and says, you're there, you're there, you're there, you're there. He's okay. I said, I'm there, where? He says, you're there in the list. I said, then what happened? He says, no, Giri sir, at the end of the meeting, suddenly looks at the list and he's ticking off. Suddenly he says, I forgot. Please call that Anand also. So everybody wondered who this Anand is. You know, in a radio satsang we had done before, I had taken the role of Anand. Ever since then, Giri sir calls me as Anand.
Okay.
It suits you. It didn't suit me at that time, because I was far away from Anand. I was in Dukkham. Okay. So I was very sad, and he said, call that Anand. So they said, sir, who Anand? That photographer Anand. So he said, sir, Arvind. Yeah, yeah, photographer Arvind. You know, I forgot about that. So, you know, Giri sir actually forgot. I was like, oh my God. And then, you know, looking back at all the things, I was just starting to look at it from Swami's perspective, you know. Imagine Swami as, okay, I picked this boy. Why is he sad? Okay, I'll give him a chocolate. Why is he still sad? Okay, I'll talk to him.
Why is he still sad? I mean, God must just have been wondering, right? Because as far as Swami was concerned, I'm on the trip. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm thinking I'm not on the trip. And I'm ruining all the beautiful moments that Swami is planning for me. It just made me think that this was physically with Swami. How many times in life I have done this, where fearing something that is, I'm absolutely unsure about the future, I'm just ruining my present and ruining all the gifts that Swami is giving. You know, this incident had an interesting conclusion also. It is maybe slightly away from the actual message, but it's an interesting thing because as Swami came for darshan, he's walking, he's passing by. I felt so much gratitude well in my heart. Every time when he passes by, I touch his feet. But today, I touched it with extra feelings. And even closed my eyes, mentally sending gratitude to Swami. And I felt that loving pat on my shoulder. I felt so thrilled, opened my eyes. The pat was not from Swami, it was from Giri sir, who was walking behind Swami. And he patted me on my shoulder. Just to confirm in a hurry, you have been informed, right? You know it, right? Because that evening, Swami is supposed to call all the students. And Giri sir did not want it to happen that I am not there in the meeting.
Right.
When Swami calls. So he asked me, you know it, right? I said, yes sir, I know it. But then it really struck me. Because today, when I look back, these incidents I have not even written down in my diary. Imagine I was feeling so sad that when Swami has given me a chocolate in a, you know, in public view and telling it especially for you, I have noted down even small things related to Swami, a day when I could touch his robe, but such a big thing I have not noted down in my diary because I was so sad to note down. It just makes me feel that, you know, living in the future, I ruined my present at that time. It was the perfect case of being getting lost in becoming.
And absolutely, because just as you said, if you were to note down, then in a span of 3 weeks, I got these three things. That would have been like a peak in your relation with Swami. But just because we were looking ahead, we were just missing out that.
You know, really?
And even as you're narrating that, I just was thinking, even when we watch a game of cricket, you know, there's a batsman who's batting or somebody who's taking a catch. We are always talking about timing. You be late by a few milliseconds, you know, you have dropped the catch. Or you're just a little early, that also happens, you know. In your eagerness to get at the ball, you go in a little too fast, and again you drop, you have the, at least the opportunity of dropping that catch. It's just being in that moment, not 1 second earlier or 1 second later, is so important, you know, when you're batting good. I think that's the same thing with life too, isn't it?
I was just thinking, sometimes, listening to everything that you were saying, I mean, I was just, suddenly it struck me really hard. Considering what Bhagwan, what we believe Bhagwan is in our heart, that he knows everything. In Telugu, there is a saying which says, Sivanagilende Chimaina Kuttadu. Even the ant does not bite without the command of Lord Shiva. He knew that Girisa did not tell you. He knew that you did not know and you were living in this anticipation. He knew that you were going through a miserable time, reminiscing about not the past, but worrying about what you're going to miss in the future. And he was trying to make your present more pleasant by giving you chocolates, by giving you attention, by giving you toffees, knowing that with your mindset, this would actually be adding fuel to the fire. You know, that's God. And then, end of the day, I'm sure he put the bug into the mind of the right people to get the message across to you at the right moment, knowing that the gold has been through enough of fire to finally receive the blessing. So imagine the amount of euphoria you would have experienced the moment you knew you were on the list. He wanted to give you that joy as compared to you just being called by some third party saying, hey, come, you're on the list. God has his own ways of making us feel special. And I also feel this is his way of putting, I wouldn't use the word benchmark, but I would say certain anchor points in our lives, which we look back upon and which sort of bring us back onto the path. Were we at any point in time to stray away from it? What do you think?
Perfectly. I also feel that as you said, you know, Swami always strives to build up to such a point where the joy that we receive is always the highest. So knowing this, it is so important that we always treasure this feeling. Because if we are able to do that, then every moment will be joyful. Because every moment I know that, hey, let me not worry. My Swami is doing this because it is going to give me the highest, higher than what I'm actually imagining.
In one drama, I clearly remember this. I think I must mention it. Sorry for interrupting you, Arvind, but I really have to share this. When Bhagwan, we were all sitting at Bhagwan's lotus feet, it was part of the convocation dramas, and Bhagwan said, Mirandaru Mahayogulu, you are all great yogis.
Okay.
You are all great rishis. And then, you know, during those days, we could treat Swami literally as our own father, and I had the temerity to say, Swami, if we were all rishis and yogis, I said it in Telugu, I said, Swami, aithe maaku smriti enduku ivvaledu. Why did you not give us a memory of that past? Swami said, why? Enduku? I said, Swami, if we knew our takeoff level in our previous birth, we wouldn't have spent 18 years away from you or 16 years away from you. We would have come as soon as we were born, landed at your lotus feet and enjoyed your avatarhood. Then Swami looks at me and says, "E janma kuna memories chal ra, inka patadanta enduku? These memories associated with this life are enough for you. Why do you need earlier ones?" I was adamant. I said, "No, Swami. You should have given us smriti, so we would have spent more time with you. We would have evolved faster." You see, logical reasoning. Logic doesn't work with God. So what Swami looked at me deeply and says, "Oka chinna katha cheptan." You know, we all love to listen stories. All of us settled down. Literally, you could say everybody relaxing in the interview room. Swami says, there was an old man and there was a rock which is in front of his house. Daily his wife used to go and pour water to the tulsi and look up at the sun, and she couldn't see the sun because the rock was in the way. So she told her husband, "Look, this rock is coming in the way. I want to do namaskar to Lord Surya. Can you do something about it?" This old man's son used to work somewhere in the town nearby. So the old man took a chisel and a hammer and started hammering that stone. He whacked that stone for 20 long days, and then on the 21st day the sun comes. And he says, "Dad, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm breaking the stone. Your mom wants to, you know, offer her prayers to Lord Surya. So please, can you..." "I'm just back." "Dad, you relax. I am here." He takes up this chisel and start hammering that stone, and the stone breaks. And Swami pauses, you know, this dramatic pause of Bhagwan. You know, everybody is hanging. What's he going to say next? Swami looks at us and says, "Why did the stone break? Did it break because of the 21st day? Or did it break because of the 20 plus 1 day?" Swami, obviously 20 plus 1 day. Then he looks deep into my eyes and he says, "Adera me life kuda. Chikatilo unnapude velutur viluva telustundi. It is only when you are in darkness you know the value of light." That means, comparing what you've gone through, Arvind, with what I asked Bhagwan, he puts us through this grind of whatever we feel, an emotional turmoil, the anticipation, the prayer, the passion that we feel for God, making us ready to receive what he is willing to give with open palms and a heart full of gratitude. Were we to receive things unasked, our attitude towards that gift would be different. Were we to pray for something from the bottom of our hearts, feel it with every single cell of our body, and then receive it, the degree of our gratitude, the passion, the deepness, I don't know the right word for this, probably my vocabulary may not be that good, but what we experience at that moment is a total communion with God. "Thank you, God. You made this moment feel special." Now the challenge for all of us is to make that moment every moment.
And you know, even as you're saying, I'm reminded of a very profound and wise words one of my teachers told me, you know, in the early years when I joined Swami's college. He said, "I've seen so many boys, Swami speaking to them and all that. Invariably, the first question Swami would ask is, where do you come from? Or what is your name?" Okay. And if Swami has not spoken to you, even after 3 years, it's going to be the same question. But when he speaks to you after 3 years, you would have earned 3 years of yearning.
Amazing.
That you would have lost if Swami spoke to you on the first day. I mean, not to compare your good fortune with somebody to whom Swami spoke on the first day, but the idea that Swami gives even when he gives on the first day, Swami still gives even when he gives on the after 3 years. It may be different, but definitely it's what you need and what he needs. You spoke about something where you're thinking about the future and losing the joy of the present.
Exactly.
I'm reminded of another beautiful incident where thinking about the past was, Swami is trying to tell this person that stop thinking about the past, think of what you are now. One of these students who, Swami started speaking to him very often, Swami would call him for an interview and all that. And somebody had written a letter to Swami saying that, Swami, you're speaking to this boy. Looks like you don't know about him. Somebody telling that to Swami. He's such a rogue, he's such a naughty boy, and he does all kinds of things, and you're speaking to him. And imagine the temerity of the person who writes a letter like that to Swami. And Swami calls this boy for an interview, and Swami picks out this very letter from the bunch of letters and gives it to this boy and see what people are writing about you. And this boy, this is what the touch of Swami can do to you. One of the first things which will happen is you'll be in a situation to accept all your mistakes.
Right.
You will not be denying. Anywhere else, they'll say, Swami, that fellow is no better to tell this about me.
That would be your response.
Anywhere else, response. If you're caught up in a situation like this with an employee, that's what you'll tell. You'll end up telling what all that guy does.
He's no better than me.
He has no authority to do this. But when, Swami touches you, that's what happens. This boy read this and he said, Swami, this person is absolutely right. I don't deserve to be in front of you. That's what he said. I absolutely don't deserve to be in front of you. And this is, true to the last word. And he started crying. He said, I don't deserve to be in front of you, Swami. You can throw me out. I wouldn't complain. And, Swami pulled him and Swami embraced him and Swami calmed him down. And he said, see, when you were 2 years old, you would run around on the streets naked. Okay? Because you didn't know. You didn't know it was right or wrong. But after some time, when your mother told that, no, you're not supposed to do that, then you corrected your ways. Okay? Do you feel guilty looking at yourself as a 2-year-old and saying that, oh God, I ran around naked, and you feel ashamed of that? Wow. He said, when you were corrected, you corrected yourself. Then Swami said, I'm not bothered about what you were. After I have touched you, you have changed. That's what matters to me.
Amazing. Amazing.
Prem, that is so beautiful, because in the conversations with Swami, Swami would always focus only on the present.
Yes.
Because here you have given an example where he doesn't bother what your past was. We have spoken the story of Kalpagiri, we have spoken the story of so many prisoners in the jails in Andhra Pradesh whom Swami blessed. It would not have been possible if Swami was seeing on the past. At the same time, I have seen many instances where Swami would come and ask, the boy, what is the future plan kya hai? Swami, full life, I'm going to surrender and stay with you. I've heard one of few of my classmates and some of people whom I know say like this. And, Swami would just give a smile and Swami would say, Jhuta Vedanta, Jhuta philosophy, easy words. Different ways Swami would respond, because again, he is not interested in what you promise him you will do. I feel Swami would always feel that an ounce of commitment today, right now, is much more valuable than all the tons of promises that you're delivering about 10 years or 20 years. Swami, I will do all this, I'll do this, and then I'll come back and serve you, Swami.
That's the beauty. One of my classmates shared this very nice contrasting incident which happened with him. And I was there, in Thrayi session. He was sitting right in front of Swami. And that day Swami had blessed his father to be part of Thrayi session. And the seating in Thrayi session, there would be chairs at the end of the hall and the elders would sit there. So his father was sitting there in one of the chairs. And this boy was right next to Swami. So Swami was talking to his father and talking to him. So part of the conversation was lost to his father. And Swami was adding to that, what he was telling him. So Swami looked at his father and Swami said, you get your son married. This boy is in second year BCom. Okay, and Swami is looking at his father and saying, get him married. So father is saying, Swami, he is still studying now. So Parledu, let him finish BCom, and as soon as he passes out, you get him married. Okay. And in between, Swami is poking more to this boy. Okay, and this boy is just about to burst. And Swami is telling him, no, you get him married. So in between, his father lost the conversation. And Swami said, yes or no. So he said, Swami, I couldn't hear you. Swami is asking yes or no. Okay, so the big part of the marriage thing is actually lost to his father. Swami telling that as soon as BCom is over, you get him married. His father is not heard. Swami is telling yes or no. So he looked around, he said, yes, Swami, whatever Swami says, yes. And Swami looked at this boy and said, see, your father has agreed. So after BCom marriage. Okay, and this boy started crying. And very profusely, he looked up to Swami in the teary-eyed and he said, Swami, I want to be with you always. And we could see that Swami melted immediately. Now Swami took his handkerchief and gave it to him and said, don't worry, I'll keep you with you, don't worry and all that. So that phase was over and years passed and desires change, ambitions vary. Okay.
Times change, people change.
No, 4 or 5 years later, Swami called this boy and Swami took him to Kodai. And similar scene, you know, Swami, he's sitting at Swami's feet and Swami's telling him, over, MBA is over. He said, yes, Swami. Go look for a good girl and get married. This time, he was actually ready for that proposal of Swami.
Wow.
Okay, because, you know, whatever has happened is good for him, best for him.
True.
And he had planned to go back and take care of his father's business.
Mm-hmm.
So he was ready for that. Swami is telling him, go back and get married. But he had to keep consistency with what he had promised a few years back.
Right.
Okay, to be politically correct, he had to keep the same stance.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, Swami, I want to be with you and do whatever Swami says.
Okay.
You know what Swami's response? Swami held his hair. Inta mandi chusandra.
I have seen these many number of boys.
Oh, I know what you want. And he said, see, Swami responded to that moment.
Mm.
That day when I said, Swami, I want to be with you always, Swami knew the future.
Mm.
But he didn't respond to the future.
He responded to the feeling of that moment. He gave
his
own kerchief, controlled the boy.
And the same was true in 3 years later when he was trying to, you know, try to keep track with the past. Mm. Swami was responding to the present.
You know, I read in a book which says, the problem with the past and future is, though the future and past are in you, you are not in the past and future. So there is nothing that you can do about the past or the future.
Hmm.
All that you can do is about the present. And that's why when the mind wanders to the past or future, makes you feel helpless, because you really are helpless. So don't go there to the past or future. Just be in the present. Take care of the present.
Oh, wow. Well, I think I should question that because...
Hmm.
A couple of months ago, I was sitting outside an operation theater.
Mm.
I was very much in the present because it was my sister who was inside the theater and they were doing a thyroid operation on her. And the present was not at all pleasant.
Mm.
I wasn't in the past. I wasn't in the future. I was right there sitting outside the operation theater complex holding all the study material in my hand going over, you know, what a thyroid papillary carcinoma can do. And I wasn't happy. So, agreed. If I'm miserable, yes, I am thinking about the past. And if I'm anxious, definitely, yes, I'm anxious about something in the future. But I'm here, right now, I'm here. I was in the present, and I was not happy. What do you have to say for that?
I think we can be, you know, this kind of situation that he has built. Another common place, I mean, suppose I'm riding my bike, I fall down, and I break my hand. I'm very much in the present. I'm having an excruciating pain in my bone.
In fact, it actually draws you to the present, even if you're thinking about the past or the future.
Exactly. You know, maybe the accident was caused because you were thinking about the past or future. But after the accident, I'm totally in the present and I'm in severe pain. I mean, so it's not as if being in the present is always happy, right? I mean, it causes pain.
Right. You know, it's a very, very profound point and I don't know if we can answer it comprehensively, but... let's just take a break here because we're getting a bit too heavy, I felt.
Okay.
We can just take a short break and we'll just play out a song.
Sure.
And maybe pray to Swami in between to give us more clarity on it.
And dear listeners, as you listen to the song, please ponder over this point because Swami has always emphasized on living in the present. There's no doubts in that. But yet, if living in the present is supposed to be the most peaceful and serene thing to do, then how do we explain this? When I'm in pain, I'm in pain in the present. I'm in the present and I'm in pain. So please ponder over it. Of course, you will not be able to speak it right here because we have the privilege of having the mics. You can definitely write to us at listener@radiosci.org. listener@radiosci.org and we would love to hear your responses and feedback. We'll be back after this short break. Please enjoy this song.
Krishna Murari
Radhika Jeevan
At that point where we initially started by saying that, you know, whenever you're sad or you're anxious or you're troubled, you're either in the past or the future. But then that important question came up that there are times when you're in pain and you're in the present.
Mm.
You know, when you're physically hurt or you're in the middle of a real serious problem, like what Arvind, you mentioned about you're a caregiver in a very serious situation. So does this thing hold good that if you're in the present, you're always happy, always blissful?
Yeah, because usually, you know, after you give a problem, you're supposed to give a solution. So you're saying that don't be in the past, don't be in the future, because they could lead you to sorrow and anxiety. So the answer is be in the present. But then the present is also doing the same. So now what's the answer? That is where we stopped off.
Right. But you know, interesting, because if you look at pain,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't know, I've felt this many times, you know, especially when you have a bad headache. You invariably, if you stop and wonder, your pain is actually in comparison with that time just sometime back when you didn't have the pain. You're always comparing your pain with a moment of no pain.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know, that's when actually it troubles you.
Yeah, in comparison to that time, I'm having a pain now.
So, pleasure is actually an absence of pain.
Yes, in fact, that's how they define what you call disease, right?
Awesome.
You say disease when you're in dis-ease. Because you know ease, and now you're not in that ease, they're saying that there's something wrong with you.
Interesting.
And that is an idea which is kind of pushed in our head. And, you know, a little way of seeing that is, have you ever experienced, you know, when you're having some pain, you give all your focus on that pain and ask yourself, what is this pain? What is this sensation? You know, why am I supposed to run away from this? Why am I supposed to not like it? If you actually look at pain so sincerely and focus, you actually for a moment don't feel that pain. You just feel it as a sensation. Okay, this is also something. Like sometime when you taste a new dish, you know, you are tasting something which is a taste which is not familiar to you. It's another taste. It's not necessarily something which is not tasty.
I get your point. So you're saying that when I'm having pain now, it's because of my mind associating to a time in the past when there was no pain.
Right.
So which means if I'm not associating with the past, then currently I will not have pain. To make it...
Let's put it technically.
Okay. Technically.
No, yes.
I mean, okay, so it might sound absurd when put this way, but you know, when you are speaking, there's something very wonderful actually struck me. Just imagine a person has been born blind, okay? So when he's blind, he's been blind throughout his life. He doesn't know what is the meaning of seeing, what is the meaning of color, nothing he knows. He will not cry. We have seen so many, you know, places where for the differently abled children, we have people who are, children who are blind, they are happily playing about. At the same time, look at a person who lost his sight, say, when he was 15-year-old. Even for 20 years after he has lost his sight, he will always cry saying that, you know, I lost my sight, I'll never be able to see again. And this is where, you know, the actual meaning of what you said comes so profoundly. It is because he's comparing himself to a time when he had sight that now he's feeling bad, he doesn't have sight. But a person who has been born blind, of course by default he is not having anything to compare with. Therefore he doesn't compare and he doesn't keep crying that he is blind.
It's a very, very profound point because
Absolutely.
That brings in the idea of parenting very strongly. Because invariably, even if you talk of a child who is born blind, if he is being fed with that idea that he is less fortunate.
Right.
That is when he will think of the future when maybe he'll find a cure. And the idea of that not coming or that not materializing is going to make him even more sad.
What struck me harder was you giving this example, and again, you know, thought going back to that statement when Swami said, it is only when you experience darkness that you know the value of light.
Right.
Not the other way around. He puts us through a grind so we realize the value of what we are getting. That means even the pain that we are experiencing because of associating a memory with the past is actually an enriching experience if we were to look at it, or if we had the ability to look at it at that level.
Right.
But then as you said, as Arvind, you were pointing that point out, is it possible for us to be a witness to the pain? And there's been no greater example for me. Personally.
You mean a conscious witness?
A conscious witness.
Not like a person who is born blind. By default, he's a witness. He doesn't know what it means.
But to be in the situation, to know what is the absence of pain, to be physically in pain and yet not suffer. You know, the greatest example that comes to me is Bhagwan himself. I was witness to this. Actually, you know, I'm having a lump in my throat when I think about it, but I think, you know, there were many of us who were witness to this. This happened in the Hillview Stadium.
Oh, the January 11, 1999.
Oh man, that was the day, Arvind. I tell you, the way I wept when you know, Narasimhamurthy sir told us what actually happened on the Shankranti day, I was literally, you know, I don't think anybody had a dry eye in Kulwanthal. If he had a dry eye, either he must have crossed all limits of Siddha Pragyatva Nirvikalpa Samadhi, or he must have been an unfeeling marble statue.
Heartless creature.
Absolutely heartless. Swami had a broken arm.
An injury on the spinal cord?
An injury on the spinal cord. He wasn't able to walk. There was so much pain. Still he came down the steps, walked down the steps, took the group photographs, went back up. Never gave us an inkling of what pain he was going through. And we were all very, in fact, people were requesting Bhagwan to come down and give group photographs. And unhesitatingly he was coming.
Obliging. Hmm.
I was literally feeling miserable. I was in tears. Like, Swami, we didn't know you were going through this pain. And we were forcing you to come down and take group photographs for our own petty satisfaction. And I want a memory of having Bhagwan giving a group photograph to me. Each time I look at that photo, it will only be tearing me further. Like, I put Bhagwan into pain. But then what was Bhagwan's response?
Exactly. That, you know, Bhagwan's response was phenomenal because he said, I felt so happy. Swami was feeling bad that my children, they're performing for me. If I don't give them pictures, they may not be so happy. How can I put my children to pain just because I'm in pain? How can I be selfish? This is what Swami said. Now, I remember that morning, I had my camera with the zoom lens. I was trying to take a closer picture of Bhagwan. Swami was standing and waving to the ladies' side gallery there. And the next second, there was no Swami, you know. It was like a vanishing trick. But that is when I put the camera down. I was trying to see with my, see directly what had happened. And Swami got up. So, I got to know that Swami had a fall. And again, when I looked back to the zoom lens, you know, Swami was smiling and waving. Like, everything was normal. And it was forgotten there. It was only, you know, dear listeners, this is there in a public discourse. You can check out the discourse on the 14th of January 1999, where everything has been revealed. And when Swami revealed the extent of the injuries, a hit on the head, a hit on the spinal cord, and as you said, on the hand, it is so painful. And in fact, Swami said that he didn't want people to find out that he's suffering, because then they will not thoroughly enjoy the sports meet. They will be focusing on Swami. And therefore, he went to the bathroom 5 times. Swami said that the boys helping him also wondered, why is Swami going to the bathroom so many times? But it didn't stop at that. He was going there to wipe off the blood.
And wash the towel.
That is the thing, you know. Because they may detect the blood stains on the towel. He even was washing off the towel so that it is not detected. And then, you know, in the discourse, Swami says, of course there was pain, but there was no suffering. I'm so happy.
Exactly. That's the message that I got from that incident. Each time I think of me being in pain or somebody else being in pain or me reacting to a situation in pain, it comes as a slap, a very resounding slap. Being conscious about the pain, yet separating oneself from that pain for the joy of others, that is truly Bhagwan.
You know, talking of slaps, recently I was delivered a slap when I got to know of this angel of God, this beautiful person. We have carried a cover story also on this.
Okay,
particular.
You're referring to Sai Kaustu.
Yes.
Okay, one of our volunteers.
Fine. Yeah, I mean, I think Prem, we should briefly recap about Kaustu for many of our listeners who have not yet read this article, which is on the homepage, entitled as Sai's Kaustu Das Gupta. I mean, it's a perfect example of how one can be in such tremendous pain and suffering and a position of complaint and yet be blissful and joyful.
You know, it happened, I think, a little over a year ago when there was this boy who was absolutely so active on the social networking and
Facebook,
so much, yeah, Facebook, and bubbling with joy and wanting to do something. So every now and then he would post some pictures of Swami and some graphics of Swami. And then when we started our foray into social networking, Facebook and Twitter and all that, he offered to, you know, be of some help. He would make some graphics. And to start with, it was a bit immature and, you know, not to our expectations. But we found this boy was so eager to learn, because he said, you know, he was not put down by the fact that you tell him that, no, it's not, you know, up to our mark.
And, you know, if beforehand you know that a person is differently abled, as they say it nowadays, differently abled, you tend to, you know, be a little lax. You want to be a little more kind because you feel that, since we were not aware of it, we were fully strict. I mean, in the sense saying that, come on, it has to be improved a little better. But, and this person, Kaustu, did it.
Right. And eventually, you know, he started taking suggestions from Mohan, who's our usual graphic designer for the webpage. And he would take suggestions of what color codes to use and contrast and the designs and all that. And today, you know, Mohan is witness to that. He says that he makes graphics better than me.
Wow.
You know, that's the level to which he has come to.
Imagine, and all this seems so inspirational if it's anybody's story.
Mm.
But Kaustubh's story is extra special because this boy, when he was born itself, he was a prodigy. He was a brilliant dancer.
Mm.
But he had to cut short his dancing career because he suffered from what they call as a brittle bone disease.
Oh.
Because of which the bone gets so brittle that
the bone doesn't form
properly
like the rest of us have.
The calcification is bad, because of which in a month he used to suffer 2-3 fractures.
Oh.
He had to give up dancing. So what does he do? He joyfully gives up dancing because he takes up singing.
Wow.
And he turns out to be a prodigy even in singing. You know, he has got pictures with all the, you know, name the who's who of Indian music.
Mm.
You know, all the maestros.
Mm.
Ravi Shankar and Pandit
Shivakumar
Sharma, Anup Jalota, and Anuradha Paudwal, Kavita Krishnamurti. He's got pictures with all these people. Because all of them came and said that, child, you are a gem. And told his parents that you have a gem here. And he was such a brilliant singer. He performed, he gave concerts. But then he found out that even when he sits for more than an hour, his thigh bone breaks. His hip bone breaks. He's not able to sit. And that disease has progressed. It's a decade from that, he no longer sings now. Okay. And he's confined to his bed all the time, because even if you give him a congratulatory pat on his shoulder may fall off and break or dislocate. All his joints have been snapped metallically, in metallic bonds.
You mean clamp them metallically?
Yes. Clamp them so that he doesn't make sudden movements and break them. And that's his condition, where now he needs help to do even the day-to-day things like washing your face or anything.
Hmm.
But when we went and met him, oh my God, what a beautiful smile on his face, and always exuding energy, enthusiasm, passion, joy, name it, name all the positive qualities, and he's there. And you know, inwardly, it almost, your inner voice is screaming out. Asking, why are you not complaining? You've got a million things to complain about. And this is, you know, he's also, it's not as if he's from a princely family. They have their own financial restraints, but they're managing it so well. His mother does seva. I mean, here is a person who I feel is in need. That is what I'm feeling. But here is a person who is doing free seva for Radio Sai. His mother is doing seva. Anybody in the world will say that this is a family that needs a lot. But this is a family that is simply giving a lot. And Kaustubh especially is exuding and giving, not only in terms of the artwork for Radio Sai, the heart work that he does. I mean, seeing him, I thought I'll go there and cheer him up a bit. Because, you know, he's differently abled and he's full-time, he's stuck in his bed.
Hmm.
But I ended up being a receiver. I received how one should lead life, how one should be happy. It made me so guilty. And next time, even if I complain about what I think is the biggest problem, all I have to do is just think of Kaustubh. Think of Swami's angel like this. And then it makes me realize, oh my God, what am I complaining about? And it is not as if Kaustubh complained. You know, I spoke about his condition more than he wanted to. He did not want to speak about it at all. All the while he spoke to me, he spoke only about the wonderful things that Swami has given him. Radio Sai, awareness that Swami has come, the ability to see him, the ability to interact with so many people who are top in singing, because he has got all this. He says, all this Swami has given me. Wow, what wonderful it is. And today you have come to visit me. I feel so nice. G. Venkatraman sir wrote a letter to me on my birthday wishing me. What a blessing it is. The head of Radio Sai, he has to deal with the whole world. Yet he writes a letter to me. How blessed I am. I do not have enough time to count my blessings. And that is why, I mean, it is not something great that I'm not complaining. I don't have time to complain because there are so many gifts to be grateful about.
Really, I'm telling you, when we went and met him, he was saying that, you know, brother, I've not left this room for so many years now, but I'm so happy because Radio Sai started doing live broadcasts of all the programs.
Love. Because I'm not able to leave the room, Swami has got the whole world into my room for me. How wonderful it is.
He has understood, not understood, He's literally living the moment. Every single moment of his life. In total joy, in total gratitude to God, in spending every single moment. Wow. And Kaustubh is Kaustubh. just listening to you, Arvind, I was taken back in time to my MBA days when, you know, Swami just gave me one opportunity or one chance to experience what Kaustav is experiencing every day. I mean, I would once again refer to this as an anchor point in my life. You know, like in the HTML page, you have anchors. You're like, this particular, wow, I mean, I really don't know where to start. I mean, Kaustav is something else. But I must share this because God would have given this to each and every one of us at some point in time. We have to choose to hang on to that anchor or at some point in time go back to that anchor. Of course, we are connected to it, but we have to choose how long we want that chain to be. It was during my MBA and Bhagwan had recently delivered a discourse saying, I am in all of you. If I am blessing somebody, I am blessing all of you. I have separated myself from myself to love myself. You must have, at least I must have heard this at least quite a number of times. It's, it's Bhagwan's most favorite message. But I don't know why, you know, pata nahi kyun, it struck me so hard at that time. I said, okay, Swami, let me start. Because Bhagwan said in that discourse, the moment you start experiencing this, you will never ever feel unhappy in your life. He was talking about in a specific context, I won't go into that right now, but what Bhagwan was trying to say was, do not feel that I'm giving somebody an opportunity and I'm ignoring you. If I'm giving somebody an opportunity, it's not that I'm giving somebody an opportunity. I'm giving myself an opportunity through that body. I choose which instrument I want to choose.
It's almost like saying the hand should not feel jealous that only the mouth is being fed. It should know that when the mouth is fed, the hand also has received the nutrition.
Exactly. So I said, okay, Swami, let me start practicing this. You know, sometimes we begin to have a deal with God. I said, Swami, I will try to practice. Now you help me. He's laughing, of course, but then the fact is that. So I said, okay, Swami, let me try doing this. And believe me, bros, it was awesome. I was sitting in, you know, maybe the seventh or eighth position, and there was another brother who was sitting in pole position. When I say pole position, I mean the 1.1 on the third block in Cycle 1 Thal, which is in direct direction to the interview room, which was the most coveted.
As soon as Swami comes out of interview room, that is the position.
That's the position he'll see. You know, that's the most vantageous point in the whole of Cycle 1 Thal. I was sitting way off, maybe seventh or eighth, and then Bhagwan comes in his inimical style, he calls the primary school children, pats them, tells them stories, asks them what is breakfast and all that. And then he looks at another brother of mine and he talks to him, gives him a Pad Namaskar, takes half a dozen letters and then looks at me. You know, I am grinning, I am smiling, I am literally like one gargoyle over there. And Swami looks at me and says, Yem ratla navutunavu? Why are you laughing so much? I said, Swami, I am happy, Swami. Swami looks at me and says, Swami says, I'm speaking to that brother and you're feeling happy. I said, yes, Swami. Yenduku? Swami, why? And I said, I do not know, okay? This is Bhagwan who was working through me at that time to make me understand what I am capable of enjoying. You know, God does it in different ways. At that moment, the answer that came from these lips was, Swami, if you speak to him, you're speaking to me. If you give him a Pad Namaskar, you're giving me a Pad Namaskar. Swami, suddenly, you know, there's silence. You know, when Swami wants silence, even the birds stop chirping. He looks into my eyes and says the most coveted words, good boy, and then moves on. You know, Arvind, when you were talking about Kaustav, I was reminded of that. Bhagwan wants us to live like that every moment. If something is being gifted to someone, it is not someone who is receiving it. He is receiving it. And he is giving it. How powerful this is?
No, if we can really identify with the joys of everyone around, I think every moment we have to be joyful because every moment there's somebody or the other who is feeling joyful around us.
This is what I'm going to take home with me today. Thank you.
We're talking about pain and overcoming pain and then finding joy and all that. But, you know, maybe there is something more profound to this also because invariably, Swami says, pleasure is an interval between two pains, or you have to transcend joy as well as sadness. Because Swami doesn't discount one.
Yes.
Swami doesn't say that you can be joyful all the time.
Yes.
And Swami's definition of happiness also is a state of no elation and no dejection. You know, that's that stable state. And maybe when Swami says, live in the now, the now which Swami refers to, the state which Swami is referring to is a state of complete balance and equilibrium.
Exactly. So I think for our practical purposes, we can differentiate saying that it is not that we should be sorrowful, it's not that we should be happy. It's important that we be serene and peaceful. Because it is not as if living in the present will make us hyper excited and every time jumping with, you know, joy, if we can.
So, you know, to put it in another way, to live in the present is not just to be happy, not just to forget your pain, but actually it's a very, very spiritual state and it's actually leading you to a very, very elevated spiritual state. Mm. And maybe that's why if you study Zen philosophy, you know, you listen to many Zen stories, that is one of the most central theme to their whole philosophy.
Okay.
They're living in the now.
Mm.
And I'm reminded of a very beautiful story which I read. To be honest, when I read it, I found that, you know, what's so silly, man? This story doesn't seem to be leading to anywhere. But it's very, very strong in its meaning. You know, there is this monastery, a Zen monastery, and there you have classes of 20 years. So you join a student, you're a student for 20 years.
Okay.
And at the end of 20 years, you're ready to be a master yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the graduation happens like after 20 years, each one goes up to the master.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the master looks at you and he will ask you some question. He examines you and he decides whether you're ready or not ready.
So viva voci.
Okay. And the best part is, the best part is, you're ready, you're a master. You're not ready, you're a student for 20 more years.
Wow. Oh my God. Zero or one.
Okay. So this is the thing. And so after 20 years, a set of students are going up to the master and the master is sitting there all alone in his hut, in his serene equipoise state there. And each one just walks up to the master. So here is the student who goes up and the master looks at him and says, is it raining outside? So the student says, yes, master. So have you brought an umbrella with you?
Mm-hmm.
He says, yes, master. So when you came in, did you leave your umbrella outside? He says, yes, master. So did you leave your umbrella to the left of your sandals or to the right of your sandals? And this man looks up and he says, I'm not sure. The master says, okay, go back for 20 more years.
That's it.
Because the philosophy of Zen is, if you are living every moment, if you're living in the now every moment,
you will be
in complete awareness. There will be nothing, no detail, small or large, missing your, you know, your memory or this one. And it doesn't need any effort. It's not like, oh, I have to collect this data, collect data. It's like every moment you collect this data. He's saying that if you live in the now, you will be aware of everything that's happening around you.
What? Exactly. You know, that is what Swami would term as constant integrated awareness.
Exactly.
It's constant. Mm. It's integrated. Means in the sense you need not actually put extra effort. And it is constant. Everything it is gathering and
perfect.
It's awareness.
Amazing.
I mean,
amazing.
I think constant integrated awareness is living in the present.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, before we go forward, I'd like to play a small clip. It's a lovely Padyam of Swami, where Swami is saying this very same thing.
Oh.
He's saying, what is self-realization? Swami is defining.
Maraki Ninnagurchi Marachi Repetigurchi ఈ ప్రపంచమందు ఈ క్షణాన చేసి చూపునెవరు చేయవలసినవన్నీ అతని హృదయమే పండినట్టివాడు అతని హృదయమే పండినట్టివాడు అతని గుండె పండినట్టివాడు అతని గుండె పండినట్టివాడు
ఏ మానవుడు నిన్నటి దినమును గూర్చి మర్చిపోవును రేపటి దినమును గూర్చి ఏమాత్రము విచారించకుండా మర్చిపోవును ఈ ప్రపంచములో ఈ క్షణములో చేయవలసినవన్నీ చేసి ఎవరు నిరూపించునో వాని హృదయమే పండినవాడు అట్టివాని గుండెనే పండించుకున్నవాడు
ది వన్ హూ ఫర్గెట్స్ ది యెస్టర్డే ద వన్ హూ హాస్ నో కన్సర్న్ అబౌట్ టుమారో అండ్ ద వన్ హూ డస్ ఆల్ దట్ ఈస్ సపోజ్ టు బి డన్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ రైట్ ఎట్ దిస్ మోమెంట్ is the one whose heart is sacred, whose heart and the mind is sanctified and fructified.
గడిచినది గడిచినది.
Past is past.
రాబోమున్నది మనది కాదు.
Future is uncertain.
ఇప్పుడు జరుగునది మన యొక్క పంట.
Present is of our concern right now.
ఈ పండిన పంటను భుజించి ఆనందించి ఈ ఆనందమును 10 మందికి పంచటమే మానవుని యొక్క హృదయ పంట.
The present has got to be experienced and has got to be delighted and to be shared with others.
And that's the clip where Swami is saying that the one who is not dwelling in the past or dreaming about the future is the one who is actually realized.
Hmm.
You know, okay, fine, realization you've spoken about and all that, and definitely this is Swami himself saying it, so no denying it, nobody is going to stand up and say that, no, I don't agree with it. But interestingly, you know, the same Swami who was saying live in the present was the same Swami who said do karma properly, do sadhana properly, and you're going to get the, you know, what you sow is what you reap.
Manchi chaste manchi dorutundi.
Yeah, and reflection, reaction, resound.
Hmm.
I mean, doesn't it appear that all these things, and we have spoken about many of these topics in this satsang itself, these are all things about the imminent future.
You know, Prem, I'm understanding where you're getting to. It's like if we have to work for the future, Swami himself is encouraging us to think about the future and consoling us, talking about karma, which is about the past, then what is living in the present. You know, this is, I think, like a small problem, which is part of a more general problem where, you know, 2-3 times, you know, I've been asked where people say, Swami said this in this discourse, Swami said that in that discourse, they're contradictory. How does it, you know, the answer that I'm sure Swami has only given it, it has come from within, is that, see, the Bohr's theory of the atom is what we are taught when we are in high school. But when we go to the university, we learn quantum mechanics, we learn quantum physics, we learn that the Bohr's theory of the atom is not actually correct. It's wrong. The quantum theory is the right one. Now, after that being discovered and that being comprehensively proved also, even to this day, the Bohr's theory of the atom is taught.
Right.
Why is something wrong being taught? It is being taught because without understanding the Bohr's theory, you will not be able to appreciate the quantum theory. The Bohr's theory is a stage that you have to pass through.
Hmm.
In fact, even those who are knowledgeable about the quantum theory, for certain kinds of problems, they use the formula and equations of the Bohr's theory to solve the problem. Which means it is like a ladder that you use to climb over the wall. After you climb over the wall, you need not hold on to the ladder. But that doesn't mean that the ladder was useless. You got to that spot because of the ladder. So I feel, therefore, we feel contradictions in Swami's discourses because different things maybe serve like the Bohr's theory before the quantum theory. And a person who appreciates quantum theory never puts down the Bohr's theory because he knows the whole picture. He knows that Bohr's theory is also needed. Just like the quantum theory. It's only the person who is struggling with the Bohr's theory who says, why are you teaching this to me if this is wrong and quantum theory is the right one?
It's like one of the discussions we had with Venkatraman sir. You know, we had this discussion about ceiling on desires. And he was giving us all the world problems, you know, because of overproduction and overconsumption and how that has spoiled the whole planet. You know, we spoke about ceiling on desires. We mentioned about the plastic
problems,
island which is floating and all those kind of things. And, you know, he was saying that how we have to act now by sealing our desires to actually reach, preserve our planet and all those things, he said. And towards the end of it, he said, but why do we actually have to practice sealing on desires? And he said, sir, because we have to save the planet. He said, no, why do we actually have to do sealing on desires?
Because, sir, otherwise humanity will get destroyed.
Because it's not good for our health and all the things. He said, no. Actually, why you have to follow sealing on desires is, you are God and God does not have any desires.
Awesome. What an answer.
And this is the fact, but he said, if you are going to go and tell this on radio, and somebody who has no idea of what is God and what is human birth's purpose, he will have no clue of what you're saying, and he will not resonate with this thought. But if you tell him that the planet is getting spoiled, if you tell him that this is good for the earth, it is good for the community, it's good for your children in the future, and then they'll wake up and do it.
It'll be
and
a gradual
it's almost
evolution.
Like that, right?
Arvind, consider this, you know, the example of the, for instance, the anti-smoking campaign, for instance.
Exactly. Precisely this. You know, when you were talking about ceiling on desires, I was thinking of this only, that when a person is smoking, we know that smoking is bad from a spiritual point of view, the body is the temple of God. And we have to treat the body as such. And that is why we are told to maintain cleanliness in body, in thoughts and everything.
He'll give a big smile and say, take a walk. But if you explain to him in a more clinical detail,
yes,
probably.
Instead, if you tell the smoker that, you know, if you smoke, you're going to ruin your lungs. This much tar is going to be in your lungs. Your children will suffer. Your thing of getting, your chances of getting lung cancer goes up so much. It makes effect.
Wow.
Though that is not the absolute reason, as you rightly said. Even sealing on desires, if you go and direct it, it will practice sealing on desires because you're God. Get lost. So, Bohr's theory, the sealing on desires to save the world, the anti-smoking, not to ruin the lungs, all these are intermediate steps which are necessary. And that's why I think Swami appears contradictory in discourses, right?
Frankly, you know, like the other day, you know, Prem was telling me about this small story that he had written about sadhana. And then,
right.
You know, and then at the end of it, the punchline was that sadhana prepares you for something in the future. Like, that was the epiphany that struck him at the end of the whole thing. And then he opens a book on Bhagwan, and then the first thing that hits him is, sadhana does not prepare you for anything. Sadhana is not target-oriented.
Sadhana is not sadhana if it is done with a future goal in mind.
Huh.
That's what you said, right?
Right.
Yeah, so then, you know, it immediately struck me. You know, Bhagwan's discourses on Bhagavad Gita, for instance. I mean, the moment Kaustubh said that, you know what I said to him? I said, look, when the master is ready, the pupil appears. Then Kaustubh looked at me, smiled and said, no, Arvind, it's the other way around.
Prem.
Yeah? I'm sorry, it's Prem. He looked at me and said, it's the other way around. I said, no, I mean, exactly that. Swami is waiting for you and you have gone to him. You have decided to evolve. He is happy with that. Your evolution has reached a level where you have decided that sadhana is actually target-oriented. Swami said, good. You accepted that? No. Now I'll prove you wrong and take you to the next level. Because in the physical ephemeral world, if you don't have a target-based approach, the mind will not be willing to move.
What is in there for me?
Exactly. We are conditioned human beings, right? You do this, you get that. You do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. Why go so far? In the 45 and all discourses which Bhagwan gave on Bhagavad Gita, this I don't remember which
96,
year.
96, I think.
Probably, yeah. I mean, it was awesome. Huh? In the first few discourses, Bhagwan would talk about saying, okay, he was talking about, you know, karma yoga. He said, look, a mosquito is going to sting you. It's coming there. It's going to bite you. The way he, you know, graphically describes the movement of the mosquito, like the flight of the bumblebee. You know, it comes to you. It's going to sting you. Then what should you do? Swami says, kill it. The mosquito is doing its duty of stinging you. Now you do your duty of protecting yourself. Kill it. Wow, that's good. I mean, I'm defending myself. Wow.
And most of us would have been able to relate
immediately,
to that.
Immediately, you know, our hostels. So, coming back to the next point. Few discourses later, Bhagwan says, I mean, not few, quite a few discourses later, Bhagwan says, the mosquito is coming, it is coming to sting you, it has started sucking your blood. Then what should you do? Ahimsa paramo dharmaha. Do not hurt the mosquito. It is doing what its nature is. But you are an evolved soul. The human being, jantunam narajanma durlabham, he hits you at that level and he says, don't do anything to the mosquito. Now a person who hears all these discourses at a single level, what answer would he be able to get? Confused, right? As you were saying, Arvind. No, then they're contradictory. But the fact is, Bhagavan has so beautifully explained things. He says, it is not contradictory. You follow the path that is meant for you. If I'm supposed to draw a parallel, I would do this. I would say, Karma Yoga is like the target and the path, the target-oriented approach. All your work is towards a target. So you perform your karma. So you have a target and a path, the process and the target. Bhakti Yoga, which is the second half, I would say there is no target, there is only a process. Because in Bhakti Yoga, it's only a process of evolution. You evolve. To what level? It's not defined. You keep evolving till when God decides you have reached your level. And the Jnana Yoga says there is neither the process nor the target. It is only you who exist. And your evolution, your sadhana, everything is just there. It is there. You just need to go through that. Now, if I were to put that, considering the Bohr theory saying, you know, you need to know the Bohr theory to understand quantum mechanics. you have to explain to a smoker in lay terms for him to understand the ethereal aspect. Being in the present is actually a summum of both. When you are in the present, you are neither bothered about the process, nor are you bothered about the target. Right? Being in the present is absolute jnana. Don't you think so? What do you feel, guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, personally, I feel, you know, this is the beauty of Bhagwan. I am what I am. That's it. Is it in one of his Premdhara's poems, he says, I am what I am. I was the same, I am the same. How is he able to say that? Because he is neither in the past nor in the future. He is everywhere and yet nowhere. Now, for us, to coming down to the level where we are talking right now about the pain that we experience, the sorrow that we are experiencing is actually because of the past, and the anxiousness that we feel is actually because of the future. If you look at it from Bhagwan's perspective, as he has explained it, you are neither in the past nor in the future, you are in the present.
And I think when we say about living in the present, this is something which is experiential learning. We may discuss and debate for long, but your experience and my experience and Arvind's experience is our own. And I feel that we will be able to appreciate this only when we experience it. In fact, speaking to the farmers in 1967, I think, Swami said, he talked to them about the power of Namasmarana. Namasmarana is something so easy to understand, chant the name of the Lord. But at the end of it, he said, how much ever I speak, you will not appreciate it. Try it out for 1 month and see.
Yeah.
Try it out for 1 month. Then you will get it. So, I feel that will be Swami's answer if we ask him, Swami, past and future thoughts bring us trouble and anxiety. So, if I am in the present, will I be anxiety free? Swami will say, you try it out. It's like we saying, I want to learn swimming, but how can I enter water if I don't know swimming? So, you teach me swimming. The Lord will say, how will I teach you swimming if you don't enter the water? So it is like that. So we just have to take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
And that leap of faith is, if Swami has said that living in the present is the way, living in the present is the way.
Excellent.
And if at all we feel that even living in the present we get pain, then there is some lacuna in our understanding, not in the truth that Swami has said. So with that approach, if we go ahead, I think we'll definitely lead much more peaceful and serene life ourselves.
Yeah. As it is said, each to his own whims. And Swami Vivekananda at one point in time said, as many religions as there are men. There is only one God. There is only one ultimate goal in life, as we can put it. But we have to decide to experiment with ourselves and make a decision and make a choice. If we choose to live in the present, there is nobody to prevent us from doing it. It's our choice. If we choose to live in the past and the future, yet again there is nobody to debate it. It's our choice. As Arvind very, very simply put it, if Swami says, do this, it's good for you, let's just go ahead and do it. Because God always does what is good for us. That's really what I feel. What do you say, Prem?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about acceptance, but the challenge also is there. The fact is, it does work. It's just that we've not tried it out, because Swami says it works. It's not only an acceptance. Actually, it does. The fact is, we've not tried it out. It actually does work.
Yes.
And each of us have our own idea of, you know, being in that moment. The problem with us is that constant integrated awareness.
True.
But awareness, integrated awareness, we've experienced that, and we know that there is a lot of joy and bliss in that.
The constancy.
That constancy, and that to be only in that, I think that's the catch. Maybe as always, put the efforts and leave the rest.
And put the efforts consistently, because you know, one spiritual master had said that intensity in your spiritual efforts is important. But also important is consistency.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, we would become flower pots. Just like, you know, the firework just comes and it's gone. Intensity without consistency does not yield results. And consistency without intensity is of no use. It's dull and there's nothing happening.
Correct.
So we need intensity of efforts as well as consistency of efforts.
Right.
So I think maybe that's a good point to bring this discussion to a close. So thanking both Arvinds. Arvind as my regular companion, Arvind,
B.
and
Arvind,
the special guest, Y. Arvind.
Yes.
It's definitely been a pleasure, and I think I should take this opportunity to throw an open invitation every time you're here. And if it's a Thursday, it's an afternoon, you're always welcome to be a part of our discussion.
And dear listeners, this is an open invitation to all of you also. Please, though you cannot, whenever you're not able to, you know, actually participate in the satsang on the microphone, please use the email facility. Write to us at listener@radiosai.org or all your thoughts, your feelings and your feedback about living in the present, which we can share in future episodes.
So thank you, and on behalf of both the Arvinds, I offer this whole effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet and thank him for this beautiful opportunity. Thank you. Jai Sainam. Murali Lola, Neeti Ani Leelalu Teeru Teliyune Abigurtim Pasadhyama Yellalu Levila Yemani Bhavintu మీ పిల్లలము మేము చల్లగా చూడుమా కృష్ణ ఘల్లు ఘల్లు మణి గజ్జలు మోయగా ఘల్లు ఘల్లు మణి గజ్జలు మోయగా గంతులు వేయు చురారా వెన్న దొంగ నీ వన్నే చిన్న నేలతో వెన్న దొంగ నీ వన్నే చిన్నేలతో కన్నుల పండుగ సేయరారా కృష్ణ గజ గోపాల దయ సేయరా నయగారాలు చూపించరా భజనాట్యాల మురిపించరా చూపుల బంధాలు వేసి గోపకాంతల హృదయాలు దోషి బాలు చూపుల బంధాలు వేసి గోపకాంతల హృదయాలు దోషి
చిన్నెలతో కన్నుల పండు Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.